Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Kara Nowicki, and I am very excited today to be with Marie Burns, Paper Lifesavers and Focus Point Planning author and financial planner. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Karen, so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
I am too. Excited to see you. I got to see you Saturday as a little prelim. We didn't expect to see each other at the National Speakers Association event, but it was fun to have already had this on the books and an opportunity to get to know each other further. So I'm very excited about all these great things that you have going on right now, including books and opportunities to teach and really serve our community. So let's just have you start by telling our listeners about who you are and what you do professionally.
Okay. Well, there's kind of a long answer to that and a short answer.
We've got an hour, so you just take your time.
So the short answer is I help people get their financial house in order so that they can focus on enjoying what they really enjoy in life, which for most people is not the money side of things. So what does that really mean is anything from estate planning, like we're talking about today. And main reason today is October is National Estate Planning Awareness Month. And today, Monday, is actually the beginning of National Estate Planning Awareness Week, which apparently this is the 10-year anniversary. Congress actually was wise enough to designate this about 10 years ago, back in 08. And so this is our at least annual effort to try to help educate the masses, because it's financial literacy in general is one area that this country just doesn't have a good system in place to educate anywhere as a required component of, you know, being a good citizen. And we all need to know it, no matter what our line of work is.
And that's the key. It's just about, it's personal responsibility and around being a good citizen. I've never heard anybody term it that way, just being a good citizen.
Right. Money itself is the number one stressor for Americans. That also relates to the number one cause or reason for divorce. And so my personal mission really is to, and this is the, you know, begin with the end in mind kind of long answer, is to try to reduce people's financial stress, because then we have healthier families are healthier citizens, healthier small businesses, both backbones of our country. So I'm trying to help move the needle on the need for financial literacy in a lot of different ways.
And you're right about our states, our educational systems, at least public education as a whole, does not prepare us for financial literacy. Even, you know, back in the day when I was in school, I know we didn't have these courses. I am not great at math, I will admit it. And conversations around money in my marriage have not always been comfortable conversations.
It's normal.
Yes, right? Of course it is. Mm-hmm. And it would be great if we that was part of what we offered, just like the, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, and financial literacy.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. You know, we have Junior Achievement is a program lots of folks might be familiar with. And that's kind of K-12 in different capacities as far as money and that topic in general across the grades at different levels. So that's a great start. But it's not enough. You know, we human beings need to hear things 7 times or more mm-hmm. before we get it, let alone act on it. So yes, we need something required at K-12. We need something required at the college level. My personal belief is the most teachable moment is in the work setting, because you are forced to sign these forms that say, yes, I need this insurance. Yes, I need to participate or decline 401k participation, et cetera. So you're making money decisions that you have to make because now you're an employee. So that's another huge teachable moment. And so going back to your original question of what do I do? That's how my books were born. This idea of checklist books that just may save your life financially. That's the concept behind Paper Lifesavers. And so again, beginning with the end in mind, I'm starting with the teachable moments, major life events. A major life event, for lack of a better word, is the end when we lose a loved one.
Right.
So that's how I'm backing into the before and after checklist in these books. What can you do beforehand to make it less stressful? Because it's going to be a stressful situation when you lose someone. And then what should you be sure you're doing after the loss of a loved one is the concept of the book series. So after this, I'm going backwards again to say, okay, before and after the loss of a loved one. Maybe next I'll do before and after retiring. Maybe next would be before and after taking a job. So the concept again is catch people in their teachable moments and they're more likely to pay attention and do something with the information.
Okay, I've got another one for you.
Okay,
before and after you get married.
That's further down,
before
right?
Before and after you get a divorce. And yeah, before and after you have it. So this mm-hmm. is fantastic. And obviously our listeners can't see the books, but they are just, I'm going to use the term bite size. Well, how funny. Itty bitty. You're itty, amazing. Itty,
that's
itty
the
bitty.
Publisher, yes.
I'm very smart. So they're small enough to consume for the busy professional.
That was the idea. We don't read anymore in general. So these are bullet point checklist, and yet it's more than a checklist because I know there's a lot of checklists out there, and yet this is a per-size checklist with bullet points, but also explanation of avoiding the common mistakes. So it's not, you don't have to read umpteen pages to get the gist of it. This is truly the what most people want. Just cut to the chase
yes.
and tell me what I should be doing.
Yeah. Folks love done for you type of things.
Sure.
And this isn't something, well, of course, when they hire you as a financial advisor, that you can do a lot of it for them. But we've got to show up in that conversation too, don't we? We have to show up with our paperwork, our documents, our numbers, and that sort of thing. But this is fantastic for someone who may want to do it themselves.
Absolutely. There's so much you can do yourself. And I have to clarify, as I do in the beginning of the book, the mm-hmm. disclaimer that this is not legal advice. I am not a legal advisor. I'm not licensed to give legal advice. But there are certainly things that you need to be aware of and think about before you see an estate planning attorney, things you can take care of on your own. And that's what this book talks about, is things you can do and things to think about, and then be sure you're asking about when you are having your estate documents drafted, for example, when you're talking with your attorney. So it feels like it's a morbid subject. And yet I had one publisher take this book, and my thought was, this is probably mostly for women, only because 90% of all women will eventually be solely in charge of their household finances. So if you're not already, you will eventually, just statistically, because of the 1 million folks that pass away in a couple every year, 88% of the survivors are women. Women outlive men in every country in the world. So it's not an if from a death standpoint, it's a when. And the majority of us that are going to be the survivors, if it's a spouse, are women. Now, this is not a book just for losing a spouse. We have lots of folks, especially in my age category, that are now helping parents either get things in order or helping them after they may have lost a loved one. And then it starts to dawn on us, oh,
maybe I should be prepared.
Exactly. Yes. I don't want to leave this mess for my kids kind of concept.
I love that. In fact, one of the media releases that you had shared with us in planning for this was for an event, I think, that you just had, right?
Yes, there's a couple of...
Oh, and more coming up, I believe.
Right. I'm kind of doing something every week this month, just along the lines of, I actually teach classes with using these books, the before and after checklist.
Excellent.
And one of them is in the Sun Lakes area, Chandler Gilbert Community College lets them use a building for their new adventures in learning. It's a semester after semester, including the summer, of a variety of outreach courses for seniors. And so I've been offering this subject for, I don't know, maybe it's been a year and a half now, but it is truly the motivated audience. You know, the statistic is 60% of Americans die without a will.
60%.
The good news is we get smarter as we get older. So the breakdown of the 60% is 78% of millennials, So the 20 and 30 somethings do not have an estate document in place versus 81% of the 72 plus year olds do have an estate planning document in place. So that 60% is kind of the average of the whole age range. Mm-hmm. So the good news is we eventually often get to it as we get older because we have more time. It's become more of a focus. We're realizing we're closer to the end than we were before, all of those kinds of things. But truly, this is important to know about and to take action on the titling and the beneficiary information at every age, because you just don't know when there's a bus or an accident or cancer or right. Yeah.
And I had mentioned this press release because, and one, I didn't realize that this is an ongoing opportunity to come and learn with you. And these are open to the public, right? Not just the community?
It depends on which one it is. Okay. The Sun Lakes one, they do have a requirement that you need to be a member of their learning community, very reasonably priced. So that's a class that people have to register for. The Aging Association, Area Association on Aging, also offers aging mastery course. And it's like a 12-week course, and one of the classes is financial fitness. So I am one of the local volunteer speakers to do the financial fitness, and we tie in this information for that as well. So you have to register for that too. I host a couple of financial wellness for women groups in a couple of different settings, but I'm looking for more opportunities to give people that chance to learn. I would love to find an employer that is interested yes. in providing this information to their employees.
So you had mentioned that when you were describing really your vision and your purpose here on earth mm-hmm. to help us be more financially well, you had mentioned corporations. And one of those milestones for us is when we get a job, or those big decision-making pieces in our life is when we're employed and filling out all that paperwork.
Right.
And so I was going to ask you, what would that look like to work with a company or organization? How could be, obviously, this is Business Radio X, so we're all about connecting mm-hmm. professionals with other businesses.
Sure.
What's a great introduction for you so that we can get your books and your educational services in there?
I think employers are always hesitant to say, you know, this is something that I think CFPs, Certified Financial Planners in general, are interested in offering from an education standpoint. And so I'm a member of the Financial Planning Association, as an example. I'm sure there would be partnering opportunities to say, at least as an initial, why don't you invite one of us into your work site and you pick the topic and see if there's enough response from your employees that says, oh, yes, or oh, no, thank you, we'd like to do more of this. Because my ideal would be that we offer an ongoing series. There's six different areas of financial planning. You could pick one and do a series on any one of those. Estate planning is one, as an example.
Sure.
But this is the most back burner area of financial planning for everybody personally. It's not staring you in the face every day. It's not knocking on your door. It's not sending you a text or an email. It's not calling you. It's not sending you a bill. So for most people, it waits and it waits. And it waits. The two situations where people finally do usually put something in place, they have children, and now they realize, oh, I at least need to name a guardian. That's the first thought usually. Or I'm going on a trip. What happens if something happens to one of us or both of us while I'm on a trip? So I jokingly tell my clients, get a major trip scheduled on your calendar,
so
and then magically you will get your estate planning.
It makes it more
done.
Fun that way, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
The other thought I have as you're sharing this, particularly around having to take care of the loss of a loved one, is when we're already stressed out, we're already burdened, we're already overwhelmed and trying to juggle everything, when our mother or father or our spouse ends up in the hospital
mm-hmm.
and we know that there's a good possibility, depending on what the situation is that their transition is nearing.
Right.
That is not the time, although that's when a lot of us are probably taking care of these things. But when we're already burdened and overwhelmed and emotional, that's got to be probably the worst time to make these decisions.
Right. That's why I talk about in the book about doing this in the calm before the storm. Our brain just works and thinks more clearly when we're not stressed. So you're making some major decisions here. just from the power of attorney standpoint of who do you want to pull the plug versus pay the bills. And oftentimes that's not necessarily the same person, for example. You know, where do you want your different accounts to go? Do you have any charitable ideas that you'd like to have carried out? So all of those are things that you don't want to be forced into last minute kinds of decisions. Or the thing I think most people don't realize is if you do nothing, then every state, and it can be different in every state, they're probably pretty similar, has what I call a pecking order. So if you die intestate, which means without a will, then your things will go to, if you're married, they go to your spouse. If you don't have a spouse, they go to your children. If you don't have children, they go to your parents. If you don't have parents left, they go to your siblings. So there's this pecking order, if you will. But the biggest disconnect for most folks is to realize that, okay, if I didn't have a will, then that's the order of where things go. But every account that has a beneficiary designation on it, each designation is like a little mini will on each account. So for your example, on an IRA, if you have an ex-spouse listed as a primary beneficiary, this is the classic example, right?
Sure.
Guess where your IRA is going. It's going to the beneficiary designation on that account. So too often, and I always commend people that, yay, they got their will drafted or a trust or both, and they're wiping the sweat off their brow, relieved it's done, but they think they're done. And 9 times out of 10, there's additional homework now that actually needs to be done after the document is drafted. Now you have to make sure all of your beneficiary designations match what you said you wanted to happen in your document. Because again, beneficiary designations dictate where the accounts go, not the will. Unless you name the estate as the beneficiary, which has its drawbacks, because if you name the estate as the beneficiary, now that account has to go through probate to get to the will to be distributed. So you just delayed and added a cost to the distribution of that account by forcing it to go through probate. If you had a beneficiary designation on the account that was not an estate, it would have gone directly to where you designated as the beneficiary. So that's a very common misconception that people, and I've had folks tell me this specifically. When I start to ask about their beneficiary designations on different accounts, they're trying to recall and they don't recall. And then they usually say, well, it doesn't matter. I've got it all stipulated in my will or my trust. But it never gets to the will or the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because you probably have an old designation on there. Or the other common mistake is people only name a primary and not a contingent. So now what happens if this is your IRA, your spouse is your primary, you don't have a contingent listed, you and your spouse are in a car accident and both perish. Now, because there was no contingent, that account has to go to the will or the trust, meaning it's going to go through probate to get to where you could have told it if you had a contingent beneficiary designation.
Wow. So much. And so many questions running through my mind. The first of which is my dad will be 80 in November.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, of course, going to have a wonderful celebration
awesome.
In his honor with myself and 3 siblings and all the grandkids and those family and friends that are here local. Because he's getting up there in age, he's very healthy, so we're thrilled about that. But we also know, right, as our parents age and as we age, right, we're all mm-hmm. in our 50s now.
Right. We're the boomers, too.
Right. So mm-hmm. as you mentioned earlier, you know, there's going to come a time that we're likely going to be caring for our parents. How does one bring up the conversation with an aging parent about some of this? Because I'm not the one in the family designated for those conversations, mm-hmm. But I know that my sister, who kind of is, hasn't gotten very far in this conversation.
Sure.
It's really, like you said at the top of our show, it's just kind of a crunchy, mm-hmm. uncomfortable conversation.
Right.
So any advice on how we can have that conversation with our parents?
Sure. And every family is so different. So you have to definitely take that into consideration. I've seen generational changes, though, where I think our grandparents, as an example, money was taboo. You didn't talk about it with each other, let alone anybody outside of your family. And so as we've come down to the next generations, I'm seeing more openness to the conversation. But a lot of your comfort level with money and money conversation actually goes back to your childhood. They say your thermostat for relationships, relationship with people, money, food, relationships in general is set by the time you're 6 or 7 years old. So oftentimes it helps people to think about, how did I grow up with money? How were my parents with money? What was the money conversation in my household? To at least understand, how did you get to your comfort level today? And in thinking about where your parents are today in broaching that subject. So I use my books as an example because I will encourage people to bring up the subject as if it's something you yourself are personally looking at, thinking about, talking to others about, sharing a resource saying, hey, I just read this book the other day. Hey, I just read this article. I was in conversation with somebody else and it got me thinking that I have to look at my accounts because I'm not really sure what I have for beneficiary designation. So using yourself as the example to just throw it out there and then wait and see what they say. If they don't say anything, then maybe you do need to probe the conversation further. But again, I just talked to a gentleman the other day that he and his brother have no idea what the family's situation is with the parents, and they're both starting to have health issues. So they want to be helpful, but they want to be aware of what might still need to be done. So they're looking for an opportunity where there's not a lot of other people around, nothing else stressful is going on to even bring up the subject. So they went to visit and had this intent in their mind, but other stressful situations came about, health related, and so they tabled it for a later time. So it's feeling when the moment makes sense and it would be comfortable to bring up. But the one idea that I think is a good starting point is to bring it up as if it's you realizing and working on this area yourself.
I love that. And so, of course, I'm thinking after this blessed opportunity to be with you, my conversation starter with my dad can be, hey, I had this fantastic financial advisor on with me, Murray Burns, and she's also an author and teaches classes around estate planning. I know that Mike and I need to do X, Y, Z, and here's a little book that she's prepared that we're devouring. Mm-hmm. I wanted to leave you a copy as well. So for our listeners, do they have to attend a class to get a hold of your book, or how can we get a hold of your book? Because
sure.
For me, I can't, if you're listening, I can't help but think this is a great way to say, as you said, I'm taking personal responsibility. We're working on this. And it also got me to thinking about where you might be at in your journey as well, mom or dad or whomever.
Absolutely. So Amazon is carrying both of these in paperback version. They're $6.99 on Amazon. $2.99 in ebook version. The ebook version of the after. Now, keep in mind, these are two checklists. One is the before checklist and the other is the after.
Yes.
Eventually, I'll get them bound. They're going to be bound probably at the beginning of the year to be a set. But right now, they're separate. The after checklist is not yet on an ebook format. It's coming. I couldn't even tell you when.
Well, at those price points.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then
really okay.
In honor of National Estate Planning Awareness Week, this Thursday, October 18th, there is an Amazon sale for the ebook version of the before book.
Wonderful.
So instead of $2.99, it's 99 cents. So if you look for it on Thursday, October 18th, on Amazon, if you go to my website, Paper Lifesavers, or my Facebook page, Paper Lifesavers, you'll be able to get to a link and pick it up that way and have it show up on your phone or your Kindle. I have it on my phone because I don't have a Kindle, but you can use the Kindle app, free app. So that works.
No excuses
as well. Right.
Plenty of opportunities. I love it.
I did have a gal just to mention,
yes,
before I forget, that in my class the other day, as we were asking questions, she said, oh my gosh, I'm getting these as stocking stuffers for my sisters because they all need to know this. And I thought, oh, it's not just purse size, it's stocking stuffer size.
It is. It really is a perfect size. And it's just that quick, you know, if you're waiting for an appointment or to pick up your child or whatever.
You can read it in 20 minutes or less.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And again, to your point, right, a checklist. There are the, you know, the list of things that need to be taken care of and the context around why those things are important.
Right. The goal is to take the overwhelm out of this. This is the old joke, how do you eat an elephant? The answer is one bite at a time. These are the bites. And you can pick the bites. It's going to feel good. You're going to check some off. See, yep, I got that done. There's 15 steps. How many you have done is going to be different. But anything you do, any of these you do, is better than none of them.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot around why it's important to have our financial records in up to date. Mm-hmm. And obviously in a place where they're accessible and that they are something we're aware of. Do you have a few tips around how to get those things organized? We talked about why it's important, but mm-hmm. can you shed some light on how we might organize them?
Sure. Some of that is in the book, and my approach with the book is not to tell you what organizational system to use. Some people are tech savvy and like everything electronic. Other folks like paper, so they might use a binder or hanging files. Part of whatever system you use, the goal should be to get it all in one place so that whoever, if it's a spouse or another family member, needs to find it because you're in the hospital or because you're gone, they need to be able to go to one place and know that they can find what they're looking for. The other big organizational tip is to create what I call a treasure map, also known as a net worth statement. Because truly, if the surviving spouse or the family member that's helping the parent has a net worth statement, this is basically everything on one page that you know has to be dealt with. The names of the bank accounts and an approximate balance. I say update this once a year. Usually around tax time is a great time. You've got all your stuff out.
Anyway.
End of year statements are with you. Update your net worth statement once a year. So this treasure map shows whoever needs to help with anything down the road what is where. Names of bank accounts, approximate balances, types of investment accounts, types of retirement accounts, any property that you might have, land, condo, home, second home, anything of value, you know, boat, vehicle, RV, those kinds of things. So it's the I own and the I owe. So if you have any mortgage, any debt of any kind, that's all on this sheet. So it literally becomes a checklist for whoever needs to help retitle or distribute or work with an attorney, all in one place. So that's very helpful.
Extremely helpful. Because I would imagine there's a lot of relationships where, again, in the stress of something, we're not going to remember or some situations and relationships not even aware on a regular weekly, monthly, daily basis where some of those funds or responsibilities lie.
Right. And so along with that, this is especially helpful in the event that somebody is in the hospital unexpectedly, is a list at least, you can do it in whatever format you want, of what is paid, when, how much, how. So bills, expenses. These days, especially with fraud, somebody might be monitoring your bank account while you're in the hospital and have no idea if any of these charges they're seeing come through are fraud or not, unless they have this list that says, oh, utilities are usually paid on this amount, it's auto-deducted, or write a check, you know, how is it paid? So that kind of a list is also very helpful. And then in the end, when somebody's gone, those places need to be notified to either stop the billing, change the titling on the billing, et cetera. So it's going to be a dual purpose list.
My husband and I have two adult kiddos and we have an 11-year-old at home and don't have this summary prepared. And if something were to happen to either one of us or God forbid, both of us, my adult kiddos would not know what to do. And I have to go back and look to see the last time we updated guardianship for our 11-year-old.
Sure.
And I don't even I don't even know who's listed right now. Mm-hmm. So this is a great reminder for me. And again, we feel youthful, but we don't know when our expiration date is coming up. None of us do.
Right. And that whole comment that you made about refreshing yourself on what is in the documents. The same thing happens with this whole idea of bills and expenses, because especially in the case of couples, we each kind of end up having our own department.
Yep.
Right? Maybe one pays the bills, maybe one takes care of the investments. So there's actually three different types of couples. So if people think about, okay, which one am I? There is the driver and passenger couple. I think of that as my parents. One is in charge driving. The other one is the passenger, glad to not know or care about how or where we're going or how we're getting there. So everybody's happy, but one person handles it all, banking, investments, etc. So that's the driver and passenger. Then there's the joined at the hip couple. They both talk about and are aware of all the banking, all the bills, all the investments, but one of them still is doing it all. The other one's aware, but not actually taking action on those things. The third category of couples is the divide and conquer couple, where they really do have their own departments. They talk about, but each of them is doing half. So one might be doing all the bill paying, and the other one might be doing all the investing and insurance related things. What they have found is that in the end, if the husband is gone first, for example, or regardless, the survivor does better if they had been a divide and conquer couple. Because now they're only taking on 50% more responsibility of the doing versus the other two couples. If the survivor is the passenger or the one that didn't do, now they have an adjustment period of 100% now that they have to take action on.
That may or may not have any education around it.
Very stressful.
Yes. With or without any prior experience,
right.
You know, when they were single or whenever. But if you've left it completely to somebody else, mm-hmm. especially with as quickly as technology keeps changing.
Oh, yes.
Which is another thought I had as you're describing these different examples of how folks interact with their finances together. How has technology changed the way that you coach and work with people? Most of my bills, 95% of my bills are paid online. Mm-hmm. And I just have to kind of keep track to make sure that they're actually getting taken care of and that there's enough money in our accounts to handle that. And most everything does not have a paper trail any longer. And so if something were to happen to me, you know, I think old school would say, go look in Karen's file cabinet in the office or in the safe, whatever, mm-hmm. and go find what you need. But now everything will be on the cloud somewhere.
Right. That's another step in the before checklist is the password inventory. So that whole concept of digital assets and how do you access them? We've all heard, now don't write your passwords down anywhere.
Well, they've got to be at least somewhere, don't they?
Right. If somebody tells me how to not do that. So again, it's whatever system works for you, but you need to keep track of your passwords, keep them electronically or written somewhere, not kept in a, you know, not on your computer screen with a big sticky with an arrow down that says passwords here. But then you need to be sure you tell someone where they really are. So that in the event, again, somebody's in the hospital and now somebody needs to go online and take care of paying a bill or at least monitoring what's going on, they need to know how to get in with the passwords. And then keeping them up to date is, you know, a whole nother challenge.
So I think we've focused a lot around perhaps the individual or couple who hasn't done any of this financial planning. How does somebody know when they're on the right track?
I think this checklist helps you because that's the response I've had with a lot of folks is, oh, I've got all that taken care of. And a couple of my clients and family members read the book and then found, oh, okay, there's a couple more things. And I've had that experience with the class at New Adventures in Learning, for example, lots of motivated folks and on top of things, but they are finding that, oh, there was a couple more things that I should have thought about and taken action on. So this checklist definitely helps
everybody
reaffirm.
Right. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I hadn't expected that as your answer, which is wonderful. So not only is the checklist there for those who might be behind this eight ball, but even when you're revisiting it
right.
and making sure that you have everything in its place, it's an excellent checklist for that as well, because you quite likely may find areas that haven't been attended to at all or haven't been attended to in quite some time.
Well, and that time factor is huge because life changes, right? So general rule of thumb is to relook at your estate planning documents every 3 to 5 years. First question is, has anything changed that I want to change? Second question is, have the laws changed? Because then you should really follow up and call the attorney that drafted the document or the local one that you're planning to work with and say, I don't have any changes. However, I just wanted to check, are there any legal wording updates that need to be made because of law changes? So that's always a good double check too.
What I love about getting to know you is that you are an educator. Really, teaching is a big part of what you do. And so it makes sense that you are an author, and it makes sense that you've made yourself available to our community for educational type courses.
My heart is really in educating because, again, it's this financial stress that if we can help to reduce it, people are healthier. So I'm a financial wellness fan. And anything you can do in advance to prevent stress later is kind of where this is all headed as well.
Mm-hmm. Does savings fall under the category of estate planning as well?
Savings as far as a nest egg for retirement or emergency savings? Or
yes and yes. Right? That's a piece of the education we would have to, and decision-making we'd have to have when we're talking about short-term and or long-term planning.
Right. Absolutely. So that is certainly a component of probably what you're looking at in your estate plan. What do I have for the short-term, what-if, rainy day kinds of things that can happen? That might be bank types of accounts. Versus what do I have for the longer term? Maybe I'm already retired or my retirement nest egg that I'm working towards. And those would be longer-term types of accounts. So all of those accounts, whether they're saving or investing or both, are definitely part of the book is organized into organizing steps 1 through 5, and then steps 6 through 15 are the homework steps because you don't really know what you have until you get it organized. Then once you get it organized, the homework is looking at everything a little closer to see, does that savings account have a POD? Payable on death designation on it? Does that investment account where I hold some stock have a TOD, transfer on death designation? Does my IRA have primary and contingent beneficiaries? So that's the homework piece. You can see what's all there. It's all compiled. It's in one place on a net worth statement. But now let's look at every item separately and see if there's some homework still to be done.
One bite or one chunk at a time.
Right.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to devouring the before and after financial checklist.
Awesome.
And I love that you shared that you'll continue writing and providing more in the series for these life milestones.
Major life events. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Incredible. Let's round out our conversation today before we close around National Estate Planning Awareness Week. You said it's been, I think this is the 10th year that the government overall has said this is important for us to have. And so tell us again a little bit about how you and your network are showing up on behalf of our Arizona community and our Metro Phoenix area community as we close out our show.
Okay, great. I think CFPs in general, Certified Financial Planners, are doing a variety of things throughout. Financial Planning Association, I believe it's this Saturday, is offering what they call a pro bono call in for some financial advice. The tricky part always about that is we want to understand your big picture, and it's hard to do that in X number of minutes or less. But the whole concept of helping people get their financial stress reduced by getting educated on a variety of things is helpful, and that's that type of event. I think there's an event coming up at the end of the month where you can come and see an attorney at one of the retirement communities and talk again about actually drafting the documents. I'm doing my financial wellness-oriented before and after checklists throughout the month at different locations. So there's a lot out there. You just need to look for it. I'm sure there'll be a ton of articles out there, especially this week. So I'd encourage people to look for those and save them. If you can't read them now, save them and read them later.
And if we were to just look up National Estate Planning Awareness Week If we just Googled that phrase, something in our area is going to come up and provide those opportunities for us.
Yes, you're right. Absolutely.
Love it. I'm curious, when you were young, did you know that you wanted to be a financial planner?
No.
Like who, I'm sure there are some people who literally from the age they were, you know, very young, mm-hmm. knew that this was going to be for them. How about you? What's your story?
No, you know, what's interesting is I started out as a food science and nutrition major with a business minor. So I was a registered dietitian for 13 years. I joke with my clients, I used to help people balance their diet and exercise, and now I help them balance their finances because truly it is behavior change. With financial especially, they say it's 20% head knowledge and 80% behavior. So if you just get the key core messages right and then set things on autopilot as much as you can so you're not making these emotional decisions every time you turn around, I've found that the eating and exercise behaviors are harder than the financial. And I think I understand why. We're making food choices numerous times a day, and same with exercise. Financial, you can do a lot of set it and forget it. You do not have to revisit this every single day, numerous times a day. So you're more likely to have success by setting up as much as you can on autopilot to take care of itself, take the emotion out of the decision, and be financially successful.
The nugget that you just shared around the 80-20 is a huge blessing in my
Everybody
life.
Everybody can do this.
I've admitted early on that I'm not great at math, and that's been for years an excuse for me to avoid these kinds of responsibilities and or conversations. And so to say it again, because I want to make sure it cements for me, I'll take a stab at it. Correct me if if I say it wrong. 20% of this is head knowledge and 80% is behavior and habits.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
As it relates to being financially well and taking financial responsibility.
Right.
And planning, estate planning. Wow.
So our financial wellness focus in this country should be
right.
Let's make sure we equip everybody with the 20% head knowledge, as well as the tools to show them and how do you put it on autopilot so that you can act on it. One of the smartest things that the industry has started to do, and employers have a choice when they offer a 401k, for example, more and more employers are making it an auto-enroll. You're an employee, you're auto-enrolled. You sign nothing unless you want to opt out. Human behavior inertia is if I have to do something, it's much less likely to happen. Mm-hmm. So if they're auto-enrolled, they're automatically saving for their future at a base amount. It's usually amount of the match and into a life strategy or a retirement, target retirement fund that matches when they'll be 65 kind of thing. That's the default. That should be the default. It's those kinds of things that we need to help people make it easier to do it or harder not to do it.
Right. And we certainly have the technology working for
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
And because of technology, so many things are easily accessible for us. Mm-hmm. And I love that we've shared a couple of times that our employers and our organizations can help us become more literate as a society. I love that.
It's a captive audience. You have employees. It's a captive audience. And there are studies that will show if they're less stressed financially, personally,
yes.
they're a better, more productive employee.
What a gift we would give your employees, right? So I know many of the folks who've been on our shows, our C-level executives, have come and shared their contribution and that which they hold as a team and all of their employees towards charitable causes mm-hmm. and supporting the community, because that feels good, right?
Right.
We have a chance to give back of time, money, creativity, whatever it is. Businesses really see the value in having employees stay with them longer mm-hmm. because they have an opportunity to also express what's important to them and are they're passionate about outside of work. So they've got so many paid days off to go out and contribute to society and that sort of thing, and or particular causes that they all rally around. We're familiar with that. And I love seeing and hearing mm-hmm. about that. And this, from my perspective, having listened to so many local business owners and C-level executives, I haven't had this conversation with any of them yet. So this is very important because it's another gift that we can give the folks that work with us, helping them relieve that stress and giving them that education and an opportunity to show up on behalf of themselves and their families.
I think it's also a unique way for an employer to stand out from other employers.
Absolutely.
With the turnover and the low jobless rate, right? Employers are all struggling to not only hire people, but retain them. And if you're offering something that is lifestyle, life skill oriented, that they're not going to necessarily find at most other employers.
This is it.
Hopefully that's a win-win for both.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. So whether we are a business owner, an organization, or an individual who would like to learn more and with you and get a hold of these fantastic checklists, how do we do that, Marie?
Check out paperlifesavers.com. My website will be running a variety of promotions just to, again, increase the awareness, sharing articles for more information. Amazon certainly has the books. My Facebook page, Paper Lifesavers, is going to be offering the same types of information and focusing on educating. So check us out. Hopefully everybody finds one little nugget once they start looking at this information, so you're better off than you were had you not looked at it.
Excellent. Excellent invitation to learn more from and with you. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Thank you.
Really learning about how we can personally take responsibility when it comes to our financial wellness, and an invitation for business owners and organizations right here in our Metro Phoenix area to bring those gifts to their employees and their families.
Truly.
You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capital's Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.